And so I said, why don't we do this? I said, we've got a lot of product coming down out of engineering. Why don't you take the number two man in manufacturing, the number two man in sales, the number two man in engineering, and set up two games. And appoint all the distributors that we don't have, and it will look like you've got their exclusive, we've got your exclusive, and then we'll figure out what to do once we figure this out. And so that's what he did. He rented another facility. We wanted to keep the idea that it was a, this was 100% owned by Atari. You know? We said, let's put your name on it. So we called it Key Games after Joe Games. And we rented a place down the street. And then we concocted the story that there's been a palace to that Keener had left with a bunch of people and decided they would compete with Atari. And sure enough, the trade show launched and invented it. They actually developed a product. They had a product on the street. And of course, they went through, they appointed all the non-Atari distributors and sold the hell out of the product. And then we circulated the rumor that there was a lawsuit. Of course, this was all made up. There was a lawsuit for theft of trade secrets and all this other stuff. Then about a month went by and we said that there had been a settlement. And the settlement was that Atari had become a part owner in Key Games. About a month later, we said that Atari had become a majority owner in Key Games. And about another month after that, we said we decided we would merge the two companies together. And so rather than take the line away from either side, because he at that point had come up had gotten, you know, like I say, every other game coming out of the engineering lab at Atari, he gave the key, and it turned out that Tank was a key game. Came out of the Atari lab, but it turned out to be a hit, and everybody wanted Tank at the time. So rather than take the line away, we gave both lines to both set of distributors, so we were the only company that had dual distribution in the whole coin operating game set. So it was a, Key Games was a tactical response to a marketing problem. You know, I guess it's, I don't want to say despair, but no. One of the things that you do when you're a serial entrepreneur is you feel a lot of fond memories and good feelings about the Atari that you knew. But I didn't feel like the Atari under Warner was the same company that I, you know, it had some of the same things, but it wasn't the same company as when I was running it. I mean, Ray Kassar and some of the guys, you know, well, when you start to think about messing up one of the most powerful video game brands in the world in very few years, it's pretty frightening. And you get sad, but at the same time, you just can't deal with it. I mean, U-Link is what I'm focusing on now. My best projects are yet to come. I'm glad that actually that Atari is still in use rather than some atrophic piece of nostalgia. I hope that Instagram treats it well. I can't hear you. Sure. The question was talking about Atari's involvement with Jim Momsen. And this is probably where I should resume a little bit. The next phase is sort of the phase in which Atari really grows up. I mean, we were $50 million a year sales company. Things were pretty good, had worldwide sales. And we decided to expand into the pinball business. It was very, very obvious to us very soon that the pinball business, unlike the video game business, tended to be commodity priced. And if you had a single player pinball, it was priced at X, and if it was a two player pinball, it was X plus $100. If it was four, it was X plus $200. And we knew that since we were in California, we had two major disadvantages. One, California is a high labor state compared to Chicago. I mean, things like workers' comp, which was bad then and is now horrible, it really, under the current laws and regulations, it really doesn't make sense to manufacture in California anything. You can't really paint things in California, except houses. And then you have to have permits. And so we knew that there was going to be a problem competing with the infrastructure of Chicago and various things with a generic product. And yet we felt that we had a lot to offer. And so we decided to get into the pinball business, but only through what we called novelty pinballs. Pinballs that were different than the standard fun. And so the first innovation that we decided to do was the wide body. And what the wide body did more than anything else is it allowed us to put a few more things on the play field, but really what it was there is to allow us to charge enough that would cover our disadvantage. We had about $100 cost differential between California and Chicago. We also figured it was about $50 shipping differential to the East Coast. And so we felt that we had to be able to make that up and yet still sell product. And so that was what we did. And that actually worked very, very well up through a planning session with Warner. And it was probably after we sold the company to Warner, they were at the planning session. And one of the execs at Warner had heard some distributors saying that they wanted Atari to build regular pinball. And he said, why don't you just build a regular pinball? I said, because you can't make any money at it. And I went through the reasons why we've done novelty pinball. And he said, I don't know. My understanding is that you always want to do what the customer wants. The customer clearly wanted standard pinball. And what they were really saying is they wanted standard prices. And yet innovation, everybody wants more for less. And it turns out that the price, one of the things that led to my leaving Atari is I just said, guys, no way. We are not going to do a standard pinball. Makes no sense. I'm on a bonus program. It's silly to get any product where you are going to lose money. And I said, I don't see any way that you can make money doing a standard pinball. And I said, way out of market, you're seeing all these cheap expenses. After I left, Warner produced, I think, three standard pinballs and then closed the business because it was not profitable. Big company mentality. And so that was the idea. We had some wonderful, wonderful designs that were planned for the product line that never saw the light of day because we didn't want it. And that is sad because there's a couple of them that I was just about to play. One was called, I think it was called Earth, Heaven, and Hell. It was a three-layer pinball, and it was there was one where there was a very, very highly canted version up here. It was a very flat. That was heaven. And then there was one, a clay field here that sort of curved around. And then there was a hole down in hell that was very heavily canted and really heavy action. It was really a lot of movement. And you could actually move the ball from one level to another, and you got different things. And of course, you basically set up certain targets and on Earth to let you make more points in heaven or hell. It was always more fun to make a lot of points in hell. I don't know why. That's the one that I really wanted to play because I just felt that it was a very well themed, well structured, exciting game. I founded Axon Games. Axon actually started as a company that I venture funded in Catalyst Technologies. And it was not doing that well, and so I decided, since it was already formed and it had a few little things, that would be the basis for my story company.